books and accessible reading on RNIB Connect Radio. For everyone who loves books, this is Read On, the audiobook show on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to Read On, the audiobook show made in association with RNIB Talking Books. I'm your host, Robert Kirkwood, and coming up today, we'll talk to the half-spooky, half-sparkly Beck Manser about her brand new book, Wild Heart. We'll hear about some myths and legends in the RNIB library. And first up, some Carnegie news. In case you missed it recently, there was the award ceremony for the Carnegie Medal for Writing. The writing category has two main awards, the Carnegie Shadowhorse Choice Medal for Writing and simply the Carnegie Medal for Writing. First up, the announcement of the winner of the Shadowhorse Choice Award.
From the screen to the stage, please welcome Molly from Chiswick School, joined once again by Mrs. Phelps to present the Carnegie Shadowhorse Choice Medal for Writing.
And the winner is Beth O'Brien for Wolf Siren, published by HarperCollins.
Oh, am I tall enough for this? I'm going to try really hard not to cry. I want to say an absolute huge thank you to every single shadower up and down the country. There's been so many of you. I have painstakingly read every single review and Shadowers Challenge you've written for Wolf Siren on the website. Some of them I've read twice because I couldn't always remember where I'd got to on the page. And your in-depth thoughts, your critiques, the way you engage with this book, I was just honoured that it was in your hands and so grateful, particularly to those who thought it wasn't their kind of book, but by the end that you really enjoyed it. A million thank yous, and I'm going to go sit down and let all my tears out. Thank you so much.
And moments after the Shadowhorse Choice Award for Writing was the announcement of the winner of the Carnegie Medal for Writing.
And the winner is Beth O'Brien for Wolf Siren.
Oh my gosh, you're going to be sick of me. Okay. Thank you so much. The tears are there already. Honestly, thank you. This is beyond anything I could have dreamed up, and I enjoy making things up for a living. So thank you. I have loved books since as long as I can remember. I can still picture where the large print books were kept in the library I went to as a kid. So I want to say a massive thank you to every single librarian who judges these awards. I'm just so incredibly, incredibly grateful. This... Thank you for giving me a moment to breathe. This whole journey began with a very niche question as to why Little Red Riding Hood didn't realise that her grandmother had been replaced by a wolf. It was not something I had ever considered, but when I did, it seemed to make sense to tell the story from the point of view of somebody like me who sees the world through a combination of light, colour, movement, context, and a sizable amount of guesswork. I never read a book like this when I was a child, but to be completely honest, it never stopped my love of reading. In fact, I really loved books for the fact that they gave me details of a world that I couldn't see for myself or didn't know to look for. So I am beyond delighted that Wolf Siren now exists for those who might see their own experiences of visual impairment in red, but I'm equally hopeful that sighted readers will have and feel as much wonder as I do when diving into a story told through eyes very different to my own. Stories, whether we hear them aloud, read them in print or in braille, have such an incredible power in this way, and libraries are absolutely a way that many can access this magic for free. But I want to say a huge thank you to two charities that might not spring to mind when you think about a traditional library. Both the RNIB and Calibre Audio have worked to make sure this wonderful shortlist and countless other books are available in large print, braille and audiobook. As somebody who can't just pop into a library and borrow any book off the shelf, I know firsthand just how invaluable these charities are in making the magic of reading accessible to everybody, and I'm personally very grateful. And finally, but by no means least, again, thank you to the Shadowers. As I said, I've read all of your reviews, and whether you loved Wolf Siren or not, being prepared to read something and form your own opinion on it is absolutely the kind of free thinking Red would have approved of. So thank you so much, and keep up the amazing work. Thank you.
In the Carnegie Medal's own words, in a shortlist dominated by established names, new talent triumphed as debut author Beth O'Brien won both the Medal for Writing and the Shadower's Choice Award for her feminist reimagining of Little Red Riding Hood. Now, Beth has been on Read On last year talking about her book Wolf Siren. She was on a couple of weeks ago talking about her new book Feather Vane. But I did reach out to her to get her reaction to winning. Thanks once again to Beth O'Brien. The full interview with Beth on Wolf Siren can be found in Read On episode 421. And check out her most recent visit to the show and all about her new book Feather Vane in episode 480. And staying in the world of spooky forests, Beg Manser's debut children's novel, Wild Heart, is out now, as published by Puffin. Beg describes her personality as half sparkle, half spooky, balancing a love for pink things, gaming and vegan food, with a passion for horror films, ghost hunting and enchanted forest adventures. And we'll find out how that influenced Wild Heart later on. Wild Heart does contain a blind character, and I was passed to RNIB to find a sensitivity reader before publication, as we'll trust about later on. But first, let's hear from the book itself. Wild Heart by Beck Manser is read by Aisha Antoine.
In the town of Twigswick, children are taught three things. Never stray past the rune posts at the edge of town. Run home as fast as you can when you hear the warning bell, and know that spirits are very real and very dangerous. These spectres creep between the gnarled trunks of old trees. They slip into the swirling mists surrounding weeping willows, and they lurk in the shade beneath bristly bushes. Hungry for the souls of the living, they prey on anyone who dares enter their woods. Rangers with wild hearts fight to protect those living in Dryder Forest from its horrors. Unflinching and fearless, they recruit only the bravest to their cause. Growing up in a world where stepping out of your door could get your soul gobbled up by something monstrous, children survive by following rules, keeping their boots laced tight in case they have to run fast, and always watching the shadows. This either makes them as tough as winter bark or as jumpy as mice.
Wild Heart is set in a spooky haunted forest called Dryder Forest. And inside Dryder Forest, there are different towns. The town of Twigswick is where our story starts. And in Twigswick is our main character. Our main character, Nettle, lives there. She lives there with her mum, Rotlina, her brother Grimswald and her sister Fern. And now Nettle is a really scared character. She's known as Nervous Nettle around the village. And she's scared of, you know, frogs, snakes, her own shadow, everything. But most of all, she is afraid of the ghosts and spirits and monsters and ghouls that lurk in the forest outside of Twigswick. And deep down, Nettle wishes that she could be braver and she wishes that she could find her courage. And the polar opposite to Nettle is her sister Fern. And now Fern is brave and courageous. And, you know, she has no fears. She's not afraid of anything. And Fern, she wants to leave Twigswick and she wants to join the Wild Heart Rangers. And the Wild Heart Rangers are the guardians of the forest, and they protect the people who live in towns like Twigswick from the ghosts and the ghouls and the monsters that lurk in the forest. And so the story begins with Fern leaving Twigswick to join the Wild Heart Rangers. And Nettle is really sad because she knows that she's never going to be brave enough to join the Wild Heart Rangers herself and go after her sister. But then 3 months pass and news reaches Twigswick that Fern has left the Wild Heart Rangers. She's abandoned her post there and she's joined the Rangers' enemy. She's joined the Shadow Stalkers. And the Shadow Stalkers are bands of bandits and rogues that also live in Dryden Forest. And so Nettle doesn't believe this at all. And she thinks, though, that Fern would never do that. She'd never abandon the Wild Heart Rangers. And so Nettle musters up what little courage she has, and she leaves Twigswick to go into the forest and find out what's happened to her sister. Secrets are revealed. Nettle starts to realise that there might be more to the monsters and spirits lurking in the forest. And maybe they're the ones that need her help. And maybe Fern, her sister, is the one who actually needs to be stopped.
Don't eat me!
Nettle let out a strangled cry as cold fingers stroked her cheek. Startled awake, she found herself safe in bed, not being chased through the woods by a swarm of sharp-fanged monsters like she'd been dreaming. Nettle smothered a scream as her sister's face, half illuminated by candlelight, appeared above her. "Shh! You'll wake the whole town," Fern hushed, flashing her chipped tooth, the result of an ankle-snagging root when she was younger. Their mother said her cracked smile made Fern look ugly. Fern, however, didn't listen and kept smiling, especially when she'd been up to mischief. "Were you having another nightmare?" Fern asked, setting down the candle she was holding on the small table between their beds. It was winter, and the smell of frost mingled with a sugary scent as Fern shrugged out of her ruffled coat. She was wearing her foxglove purple nightdress underneath and a pair of heavy boots, which she pulled off quickly, sliding them under her bed before wriggling under the covers.
Now, what are the three rules that they really should be following?
So the people in Twigswick have lots of different rules just to keep the townsfolk living there safe. But the three rules that they tell their children are never to step past the rune posts at the edge of town, because they're there to protect everyone and keep the ghosts and ghouls out, to run home as fast as you can when the warning bell tolls, and that the spirits and ghosts and ghouls are very real and they are very dangerous.
Now, where did the spark for Wild Heart come from?
I mean, I like to describe myself as half spooky and half sparkle. So on my sparkly side, I love pink things. I love pink fluffy things. I love sparkly things. I've got pink hair. If you see me out and about, I'll always have some sort of glitter on me. I think that tiaras should just be something that people can wear every day. And that's my sparkly side. But my other side is the spooky side. And inspiration from Wild Heart, I would say, came from a love of spooky folklore stories and also a love of nature, a love of visiting haunted places as well. And I just think it was a combination of all of those sort of three quirky interests that I have that came together to create Wild Heart.
On the half spooky, half sparkle scale, where are Nettle and Fern on there?
I would say that Nettle is probably, I'd say, more on the sparkly side. And Fern is more on the spooky side for sure.
Now, the setting in a book like this can almost become a character within itself. What came first? Was it the characters or the setting?
100% the setting. I remember I was on a dog walk with my family dog, Hercules, who's a big slobbery Newfoundland, just big bear type dog, basically. And we were walking through a woods, hollows in the trees, and just thinking they looked really creepy and like eyes watching you. And it really gave me this feeling of, what if there was some malevolent being that lurked in the forest? You know, I was thinking of the Oak Man myth and him and how he's supposed to be a guardian figure of the forest. But what if he was the opposite? What if he was actually quite a scary, evil figure? And what if he watched people from the trees? And that's sort of where the inspiration started, you know, the idea of this haunted forest that could kind of watch you and see what you were doing, where this big sort of magical evil creature lived and lurked.
Now, before I ask the next question, I should ask you, what is a soul seed?
Oh, so a soul seed. When you join the Wild Heart Rangers, you get a soul seed. And it's basically a little tiny magical seed that you plant into your own little plant pot, and it will grow into a magical weapon or a magical ability. And your magical weapon or your ability will help you to fight the ghosts and ghouls that lurk outside in the forest, or it might just give you something to help out within the forest and the community itself. But basically, it's what gives you your calling as a Wild Heart Ranger.
Now, other than the book itself, Wild Heart, what would your soul seed grow into?
Oh, that's a tough one, you know, because I don't think I would be. There are different types of ranger. I've got, you know, my blades who are quite fighty and warrior. I've got my herbalists who are kind of more potion makers. And then I've got my rune carvers who can wield magic. I don't think I'm a blade. I don't think I would be very good with a weapon. I'm very clumsy, so I probably wouldn't be any good with a bow and arrow or a wooden sword. I don't think I would probably be that good as using magic for the same reasons. I'm very clumsy. It would probably just go everywhere. So probably not a rune carver. So I think herbalist, something along those lines. You know, I quite like baking, so I think I'd be quite good with potion mixing. So I think I'm going to go with herbalist, and that my soul seed would grow into some sort of fun, like a big bowl that I could mix things in, whether that was potions or cakes.
Now, we are talking on the day after. At the time of recording, the book came out yesterday. Now, how's it been?
Oh, I've had a great time. I had the best launch party ever. I got all of my friends and family together at the house. So we had a little bit of a party here. And then we went down to our local bookshop, and shout out to Suddenly on She Street in Daventry. And we had a big launch party there. There was a cake with Wild Heart on the cover of the cover of Wild Heart on the cake. And I did a little speech and just had a little bit of bubbly and signed some books. And I just had the best day, the best, most magical launch day.
Does it feel real yet?
No. When does it feel real? You know, I'd love to ask some other authors. I really would. When is it going to hit me? Because I feel like I'm kind of just in dreamy work mode, if that makes sense. I've got, you know, I'm doing so much. I guess maybe it will feel real when I can sit down and relax and just look at my book and go, I did that. I did the thing that I wanted since I was 12 years old, you know, well done. But at the moment, I'm just sort of in the thick of it and loving every second, by the way. But no, it hasn't hit me yet.
The boy had dark skin and wore his hair in tight braids. His mask had taken the shape of a wolf's face, complete with nose and ears. In front of him lay an open book with lines of runes that were raised from the paper. He traced his fingertips across the page, and Nettle realised he was blind. "I'm Asta. What's your name?" he asked. "I'm Nettle, and this is my carved creature, Walnut," she said, encouraging the ballet out from behind her boots.
RNIB, the Royal National Institute of Blind People, knew about this book beforehand, because at one point we come across Astor, who is reading runes with Braille, and he's got Echo, his guide wolf as well. How did RNIB help craft Astor or make it more sensitive for readers with maybe a sight condition?
Absolutely. RNIB's help has been invaluable. So when I wrote Asta, obviously I really wanted to make sure that I didn't fall into any harmful stereotypes. You know, I've always said that representation matters, but it only matters if it's done right. And so when I spoke to Puffin, you know, when they signed me, I said to them, look, I need to get a sensitivity reader for Asta. And I knew that, you know, Puffin had links to the RNIB, and I just thought that was brilliant, you know, because I just wanted to make sure that Asta was authentic, that his voice was authentic, and he came across as true as he could, you know, because it's not my lived experience. So the RNIB's help was just so crucial to, you know, creating Asta's character.
"Would you mind describing yourself and Walnut? I find it helpful," Asta said with a friendly smile. "Of course," Nettle thought for a moment. "I'm a girl. I have pale skin and curly brown hair. I'm wearing brown trousers, a white top, and my ranger mask is plain. Walnut is a Borlet. He has a mushroom nose, a round wooden belly, and a curly vine tail. Now the grunting makes sense, Asta grinned. Beside the open book was a whittling knife. Across its wooden handle and blade were red runes. Asta picked it up. Want to help me practice my rune magic? Try throwing something at me.
Did you have a sensitivity reader for the LGBTQ aspects of the book as well?
Yes, because although I'm a queer author myself, I'm, you know, part of the LGBTQIA plus community, I'm not non-binary and I don't identify that way. And I have a couple of non-binary characters in my book. So I really needed a sensitivity reader, you know, to make sure that same thing, I'd got their authentic voice down as well.
Now, as a writer, are you a plotter or a pantser?
Oh my gosh, you know what? You know, I would normally say I'm a pantser because I like having a rough idea of like starting and then you can just dive in and you just see where the story takes you and you see where the characters take you. But I have become more of a plotter since becoming a mum because your time frame for writing is, you know, in nap windows. So when you go into writing, you need to kind of know, have a rough idea where you're going. So I've become a lot more of a plotter these days. But I would say I'm probably somewhere in the middle, really. A bit in my heart of hearts, I'm a pantser.
Now, through the magic of editing, we'll have heard clips of the book as read by Aisha Antoine. Were you responsible in any way for our casting?
Yeah, you know, this was something that really surprised me because Wildheart is obviously my debut book. So this is the first time I've been through the publishing process. And I didn't think I would get any input into some things like the cover design or into, you know, audiobook artist selection. I really didn't think I would. So when I got an email from Puffin that, you know, gave me a few options, I had an option between three different actors. I was really surprised and I had a chance to listen to all three of their like demo reels. Aisha Antoine just stood out to me. I just thought that her voice was very steady. And had a, not a spooky voice as such, but I just think it would lend itself better to Nettle's voice and to the overall tone of Wildheart as well. So yes, she's done an amazing job. My partner, John, he prefers to listen to audiobooks. He struggles really with reading books. So he's downloaded his audiobook of Wildheart and we've had a listen to the first couple of chapters. So I've heard Aisha Antoine's voice reading my book and yeah, she's been brilliant. I'm so happy that we went with her.
Is narrating your own work something you might fancy down the line?
No, absolutely not. No way. No, I can't stand the sound of my own voice. I'm one of those people. My sister recorded my speech yesterday and I refuse to watch it back. I can't do it. I probably, as much as I love that I'm doing this interview, I probably won't listen back to it. It's so absolutely not. No, I wouldn't record my own book.
Now, one of the steps in your journey to be an author was school event training. That's something that never occurred to me until you think about it. I mean, obviously, they wouldn't put you in schools without a bit of training beforehand. Have you done any school visits and how are they?
I have done one and it was the best one that I possibly could do for a first book and for a first school visit because it was my old middle school and I did this on Monday. So just before the book came out yesterday on the, and I got to go back to my old middle school, which I would have been in sort of between the ages sort of like 11 and 13. So, and I knew I wanted to be an author from the age of 12. So basically I realized my dream while I was at that school. And yeah, I got to go back there and I got to do a presentation on Wild Hearts and I got to say that I had come from the school and I really, you know, I got to see kids and they loved the presentation and I loved doing it, which is just, it was just the best day. It really was. It was such a full circle moment as well, you know, to have dreamed of becoming an author since going to that school basically, and then to come back the week that my first book was coming out. Yeah, it was amazing. It was emotional. I had to hold it together and not cry in front of, you know, 150 children. So thankfully I did hold it together, but yeah, it went really, really well and I loved it and I can't wait to do more.
One thing we'll miss if we download Wildheart from the RNIB library is the cover. Can you give us a little audio description of the cover?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So the front cover of Wildheart is very sort of wild and foresty. It's got lots of tangled branches and green leaves. On one side, It's very green and gold. There's lots of green and gold in the forest, and that's sort of a more enchanted forest vibe. And on the other side of the cover, the forest is more shadowy and purple, and that's more of your sort of spooky forest side. At the top of the front cover, we've got a title text that says Wild Heart in bold golden letters that are embossed. Just above that is in smaller writing, it says A Sister Lost and Magic Discovered. Then in the middle, the central image of the cover is my main character, Nettle, with her sister, Fern, and they're standing side by side holding hands. And Nettle's got long, wavy brown hair. She's got pale skin and green eyes. And she's wearing a green cloak and a green top, a green vest, brown trousers, and brown boots. And she's holding a wooden staff in her hand. And there's golden magic spores floating out of the top of the staff. Nettle's expression is, I'd say, open and smiley. And beside her boots is her wild boar carved creature, Walnut. She's a brown wild boar with a curly tail. And then Fern, Nettle's sister, she's got long blonde hair, pale skin, and brown eyes. She's wearing a long grey cloak with the hood pulled up. She's got black top, black trousers, all black outfit, basically. And she's, I'd say her expression is probably a bit more mischievous. She's got a bat on her shoulder, and she's got purple magical vines coming out of her hand. And then underneath that image, it says Beck Mansa in more golden embossed writing.
How was it when you saw it as a physical book for the first time?
Just, it was the best feeling. It's such a hard feeling to describe. Like I said, I'm a mum, so I can only kind of relate it to holding my baby for the first time. Like, genuinely, I just felt that kind of sense of like that this is right and this is meant to be, and this is the best thing ever. I've got my baby and my book baby.
It's available in audio. It's accessible for people who, like your partner, necessarily have a relationship with print, especially with a blind character. Is that in accessibility important to you?
Oh, absolutely. So, I wanted to make my book as diverse as possible and as inclusive as possible. I knew that when I first started writing it. I was really passionate about making sure that when we published Wild Heart, that it was available in as many different accessible formats as possible, because, I really think that everyone has a right to enjoy stories in whichever format works best for them. And also, one of the main reasons I was so thrilled to work with Puffin, because of their partnership with the RNIB's Bookshare program, where basically ebooks are available to suit the different accessibility needs of each person.
So Beck, published author Beck Manser, what's next?
So I've got the sequel to Wild Heart coming out next summer. It's going to be called Poison Heart. And yeah, we will follow Nettle and Fern on another further spooky adventure. So yeah, Poison Heart is my next book, and that's coming out summer 2027.
I always have nightmares, Nettle said with a sigh, struggling to remember the last dream she'd had that hadn't involved a monster chasing her. She sat up in bed, scrambling to keep her blankets from slipping down and letting in the cold. Their mother's refusal to keep the fire burning overnight meant every room in the cottage was freezing. "Did you sneak out to see Poppy again?" Nettle whispered. Twigswick had a strict curfew. All townsfolk had to stay inside their homes from sunset to sunrise. It was for their own safety. Everyone knew the forest spirits were more powerful at night. But lately, Fern had become reckless, often ignoring the town's rules.
Wild Heart is available now commercially in print as an ebook and in audio. It's also available in audio from RNIB Talking Books. And Beck, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Beck will be back at the end of the show in Books of My Life. Coming up, we'll find some myths in the RNIB Talking Books library. But first, let's find some brand new books.
Thanks to the kind donations from many of UK's audio publishers, it can be hard to keep up with all the great new books entering the Talking Books library. So here are two new gems. Penguin Random House recently gave us Hope I Get Old Before I Die, How Rock's Greatest Generation Kept Going to the End by David Hepworth.
On the evening of 13th of July 1985, when Paul McCartney was brought before the crowd at London's Wembley Stadium in order to close the British end of the Live Aid fundraiser to help relieve famine in Ethiopia by singing his 16-year-old anthem Let It Be, he was greeted in the manner of a venerable ancient briefly stepping down from Rock's notional Mount Rushmore in order to bestow his blessing on the kids who were gathered that day, largely for old times' sake.
This is a story of how enduring rock icons like Pink Floyd, Bruce Springsteen and many more have remained in the ever-changing music game. When Paul McCartney closed Live Aid in July 1985, we thought he was rock's grand old man. He was 43 years old. As the 40 years since have shown, he and many others of his generation were just getting started. This was the time when live performance took over from records. The big names of the 60s and 70s exploited the age of spectacle that Live Aid had ushered in to enjoy the longest lap of honour in the history of humanity, continuing to go strong long after everybody else had retired. Hence, this is a story without precedent, a story in which Elton John plays a royal funeral, Mick Jagger gets a knighthood, Bob Dylan picks up the Nobel Prize, the Beatles become, if anything, bigger than the Beatles, and it's beginning to look as though all of the above will, thanks to the march of technology, be playing Las Vegas forever.
At the time, it seemed faintly ridiculous to regard a veteran like McCartney as being in the same bracket as the relative youngsters who had planned the day. In fact, he had only recently celebrated his 43rd birthday. On the 25th of June 2022, when the same Paul McCartney was introduced to an even larger crowd at the Glastonbury Festival in Somerset and simultaneously to the watching millions on TV, an occasion he instigated by singing his 58-year-old composition Can't Buy Me Love, or at least singing along with the crowd, who seemed wholly familiar with the words, despite the fact that only a minority of them had been born when it was released, he was seized on as one of the few things a 21st century festival audience who had grown up in a wilderness of specialisms and subcultures could possibly be expected to agree upon. This occasion took place only a week after he had celebrated his 80th birthday. This time, there was no thought of apologising for the years. This time, the years were the point.
Hope I get old before I die. How Rock's Greatest Generation Kept Going to the End by David Hepworth is read by the author and runs for 10 hours and 44 minutes.
New in the library, we have Songbird, an intimate biography of Christine McVie by Leslie Ann Jones. It was donated to us by Bonair.
A white weatherboard millhouse leans beside the Little Star River, keeping watch over the village of Wickenbrew. Across a picturesque green with its 13th century flint-built church of St. Andrew, green-shuttered manor house and grand Queen Anne rectory, lurks an ancient timber-framed alehouse known as The Rose.
Christine McVie was a quintessentially English rock star, as both the backbone and the beating heart of Fleetwood Mac. As famous for their occasionally life-threatening decadent lifestyles as for their musical brilliance, they were held together by this strong, constant figure whom they dubbed the mother of the band. It was Christine who contained the flock and always got them back on track, and yet her personal life was every bit as tempestuous as those of her bandmates, weathering affairs, divorce, addiction and fiery passion, all which bled into her now iconic songwriting. Told by an author who herself was friends with Christine, and with new contributions from those who knew her best, Songbird offers a true insider's view and a deep psychological insight into Christine as both a woman and a musician, the ultimate picture of a rock legend and a national treasure.
The homely inn, like the medieval Kentish village itself, is a quaintly photogenic refuge. Locals, walkers and occasional sightseers head here to sup and dine, to toast birthdays, weddings and funerals, to rejoice and to mourn, to ponder time both spent and yet to come. Creaking beams, wood floors and spitting log fires heave with fragments of the bygone and the blown. The prevailing mood is cosy, if a little restless. Non-villagers here are en route to somewhere else. Not all of them could tell you where they're heading. At a time in her life when she had burned bridges and turned her back on her bandmates to make a new home in this tucked-away place, Christine was a frequent visitor to the Rose. She dropped in every day, give or take at one point, around lunchtime or during the early evening, in need of human contact, as well as sustenance, and for want of anything better to do.
Songbird, an intimate portrait of Christine McVie by Leslie Ann Jones, is read by Lucy Traeger and runs for 9 hours and 50 minutes.
For more information, head to rniblibrary.com or call the helpline on 0303 123 9999.
RNIB Library has all the latest reading titles in a format that suits your needs. You choose the books, you choose the format, we deliver to your door. Follow us on Twitter at RNIB Library or find us on Facebook.
Before we return to Beck Manser for the books of her life, and in keeping with the theme of today's show, let's find some giants, monsters and dragons, and maybe more, in our next feature. Amelia Hilton explores the RNIB Talking Book titles on UK myths and legends.
What are some of the stories that shaped the UK? Well, today we'll explore titles from the RNIB Talking Books Library that delve into the myths and legends of the land once known as Albion. Our first pick is Storyland by Amy Jeffs. Soaked in mist and old magic, Storyland is a new mythology of Britain, set in its wildest landscapes. It begins between the creation and Noah's flood, follows the footsteps of the earliest generation of giants from an age when the children of Cain and the progeny of fallen angels walked the earth, to the founding of Britain, England, Wales and Scotland, the birth of Christ, the wars between Britons, Saxons and Vikings, and closes with the arrival of the Normans. These are retellings of medieval tales of legend, landscape, and the yearning to belong, inhabited with characters now half-remembered, Brutus, Albina, Scota, Arthur, and Bladud among them. We visit beautiful, sacred places that include prehistoric monuments like Stonehenge and Wayland Smithy, spanning the length of Britain from the archipelago of Orkney to as far south as Cornwall, mountains and lakes such as Snowdon and Lochinteave, and rivers including the Ness, the Soar, and the story-silted Thames in a vivid, beautiful tale of our land steeped in myth. It illuminates a collective memory that still informs the identity and political ambition of these places.
The tales to come are gilded by the rays of the setting sun. Written down and recited in a territory once believed to be at the westernmost edge of the world, their audiences also held themselves to be the last to witness the end of each day. To live in Britain then was to possess an edginess, a brinkhood, unknown to the great eastern citizens whose homes occupied the centre of the map. Yet myths drew threads across the globe and across time. The idea of Britain, what it was and where it came from, its connection to distant lands and its own native qualities, fascinated its inhabitants then as it does now. Accounting for the mysteries of its coincidence of place and people produced the wondrous myths and legends that you are about to hear. From stories of warlike giants and necromancers to the familiar adventures of Arthur, Merlin and King Lear. For centuries these tales moulded perceptions of Britishness. They still do, even if many have been forgotten.
In Storyland, Jeffs reimagines these myths of homeland, exile and migration, kinship, loyalty, betrayal, love and loss, in a landscape brimming with wonder. Storyland is available as an audiobook and is narrated by Lucy Patterson and Amy Jeffs. It lasts for 7 hours and 28 minutes. Along with audiobooks, the RNIB Talking Books Library also has various radio adaptations of books, including this retelling of The Tales of the Mabinogi, Lost Legends and Dark Magic, a BBC Radio full-cast fantasy adventure. These are tales of romance, tragedy, comedy and fantasy, and together they form the earliest prose stories of Britain. They tell of a mythical pre-Saxon era of medieval Wales. This is the land of magic, of dragons, fairies and giants. It's a land of romance and tragedy, adventure and fantasy. Written around the 14th century, the stories actually come from much earlier than that. They developed out of oral traditions before being compiled in the 12th and 13th centuries. Pryderi, Prince of Dyfed, heads to the Harlech in North Wales to win the hand of Princess Branwen of Gwynedd. But he must impress her giant of a brother, King Bran the Blessed. With Irish warships headed for the Welsh coast, the prince must then embark on a dangerous mission to win the favour of Matholwch, King of Ireland.
Come on, Pryderi.
You asked for it?
The world we see, the world of the mountains and the valleys, the villages and the farms, is nothing more than a veneer.
Try and hurt me this time.
Our world is no more than a painted shroud, masking what lies beneath.
Remember what I taught you, boy? When an opening arises, do not hesitate. Do you submit?
No.
How do you plan to win? You have lost your weapon.
Look over there. There's a fox. Fox.
You are my eldest son, Pryderi. You are a man now. In years at least, there are expectations that must be fulfilled, boy.
I'll train harder.
It's not about the combat. It's your whole demeanor.
I don't know why I bother.
Well, I think it's time you were married. Knowing a woman could be the making of you.
Married? So who?
King Bran of Gwynedd has made it known he is seeking suitors for his youngest sister. Now get yourself up to Harlech and see if you can secure Princess Branwyn's hand.
Mabinogi, Lost Legends and Dark Magic is available in audio and is dramatised by a variety of actors. It lasts for 3 hours and 37 minutes. Finally, we head to Scotland for a book exploring the legend of the Loch Ness Monster. This title is The Loch Ness Story by Nicholas Witchell. The legend of the Loch Ness Monster dates back 1,400 years, but this book explores how scientists explore sonar charts and underwater photographs of Loch Ness. The facts may suggest that Loch Ness could hold the only living survivors from the age of the dinosaurs. You'll have to listen to find out.
The mysteries of Loch Ness have never come closer to some form of officially accepted conclusion than they did in the closing months of 1975. Amidst international publicity, unknown since the entire Loch Ness Monster story started exactly 42 years earlier, in November-December of 1933, a set of underwater photographs was released which, in the carefully considered opinion of many eminent scientists, showed the large unknown animals of Loch Ness in incontrovertible detail for the first time. Although the pictures did not, as events turned out, finally and officially establish the existence of the unknown species in Loch Ness, they brought this perennial favourite right back into serious public consideration, and, most important, they at last upgraded Nessie from the dismal realms of a visual aberration to a subject of scientific status deserving full and proper investigation. There is, nevertheless, still a great deal of heat left in the Loch Ness controversy.
The Loch Ness story is available as an audiobook and is narrated by RNIB volunteers. It lasts for 8 hours and 56 minutes. The RNIB Talking Book Service is completely free and gives you access to these titles and over 40,000 fiction and non-fiction books for adults and children in accessible formats that suit you. For more information or to sign up to the RNIB Library, get in touch. Call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email helpline@rnib.org.uk. readon.co.uk.
And finally, on today's Read On, a return to the sparkly, spooky Beckmancer for the books of my life. Is there a book from childhood that made you fall in love with reading?
You know what? I've had, since I was writing my speech for my book launch, it made me think about way, way back at the beginning, like what books must have inspired me to write Wild Heart. And I remember my mum, like one of my earliest memories is my mum reading the Usborne book of stories, Dragons, Giants and Witches. And I remember her reading this book and it was full of like stories like the Langton Worm and full of like little spooky facts about witches. Like if you know, the churches ring the bells to ward the witches off, and that if your milk curdles, that means a witch is nearby. So I really think that that book really influenced me a lot in writing Wild Heart because it was so full of folklore and spooky folklore. And of course, Wild Heart is full of that. So I'd say, yeah, the Usborne book of stories, Dragons, Giants and Witches.
Long ago, people thought witches were horrid old women who wore black clothes. They were afraid that witches would put bad spells on them. But there were kind witches too, who only made good spells. When a bad witch put a spell on people, they asked a kind witch to take it off. When one witch wanted to visit a witch friend in the next village, she flew there on her broomstick. There were also some men witches. They were called warlocks and sometimes flew around on pitchforks. Each witch had a special helper called an imp. Imps carried out the witch's orders and visited the houses of her enemies to bewitch them. Many witches also had a black cat, a white mouse, a big black raven, a toad, a lizard, or an elf to help them with their bad spells. Each witch made spells by boiling up herbs and other things in a cauldron. Spells only worked if the mixture was stirred anti-clockwise. Sometimes a witch's spell was so strong that even a white witch could not take it off. Then a priest had to come to drive it out.
Go away.
The village of Canyadon has a very old church. Long ago, the people believed that 9 witches who lived in the village kept the church safe. Canyadon witches did not fly on broomsticks like other witches. They flew on gates.
Here we go!
One day, a witch flew over the river to the next village. She wanted to steal their church bell. She landed on the church roof and lifted it off its hook. The bell was too heavy to take home on her gate. She ran down the hill with it towards the river. The people chased her, but she was too quick. She put the bell in a tub and began to row away. But when she was halfway across, there was a terrible storm. She cried out for help. No one could help her. The tub turned over. The bell sank, and so did the old witch of Canyadon. Even now, people sometimes say they can hear the old witch ringing her bell at the bottom of the river.
There isn't an official audio version of the Usborne storybook of Dragons, Giants and Witches by C.J. Rawson, but that clip is from a semi-animated VHS from 1990 that someone has uploaded to YouTube. It's narrated by Jonathan Kidd. Just search for Dragons, Giants and Witches 1990 UK VHS. Is there a book on a rainy day you could happily curl up with and reread?
You know, I recently reread Dracula, and I know that's just my spooky side. That's like Dracula is one of my comfort books that I'll come back to again and again. And I say reread, I mean, obviously it's thick, it's like a brick. I started rereading it just before October, foolishly thinking, oh, I'll read it, you know, just in time for Halloween, which of course never happened. So I've just finished reading it now. And I would say that's always going to be a book that I'll go back to on a rainy day. I love it. I remember reading it first when I was at school. And yeah, I love the spooky side of it. I'm a big fan of vampires.
Cutting from the Daily Graph, 8th of August. Pasted in Mina Murray's journal. From a correspondent, Whitby. One of the greatest and suddenest storms on record has just been experienced here, with results both strange and unique. The weather had been somewhat sultry, but not to any degree uncommon in the month of August. Saturday evening was as fine as was ever known, and the great body of holidaymakers laid out yesterday for visits to Mulgrave Woods, Robin Hood's Bay, Rig Mill, Runswick, Staithes, and the various trips to the neighbourhood of Whitby. The steamers Emma and Scarborough made trips up and down the coast, and there was an unusual amount of tripping, both to and from Whitby. The day was unusually fine till the afternoon, when some of the gossips who frequent the East Cliff churchyard, and from that commanding eminence watch the wide sweep of the sea visible to the north and east, called attention to a sudden show of mare's tails high in the sky to the northwest. The wind was then blowing from the southwest in the mild degree, which in barometrical language is ranked number 2 light breeze. The coast guard on duty at once made report, and one old fisherman, who for more than half a century has kept watch on weather signs from the East Cliff, foretold in an emphatic manner the coming of a sudden storm.
One of the versions of Dracula by Bram Stoker in the Talking Books Library is this version as read by Greg Wise and Saskia Reeves. It runs for 18 hours and 27 minutes. And is there a book you've read recently? It doesn't have to be a contemporary book, but you've read it recently, it's fresh in the mind, you'd like to recommend?
Oh, I would recommend definitely Hollow Monsters by Lee Newbery. I've read that recently. I'm a big fan of Lee's previous work. And yeah, this was his new one that came out, I think, last month in May. So I've just finished Hollow Monsters. And that's so fun. As someone who's grew up in the 90s loving Pokemon, it's brilliant because it's basically about a little boy called Newt who lives in this world where people play this game called Hollow Monsters, which is basically you get your little monster cards, which are very similar to a Pokemon card, and it's got a monster on there. It has different attacks, and people put their cards into a little holographic machine on their wrist that then casts the monster out, and they can battle the two monsters. But obviously Newt's character gets involved in, I don't want to give too much away, but stuff happens and some of the hollow monsters might be coming to life and obviously causing a bit of trouble. And Newt finds himself embroiled in all this chaos. And it's just a really, really fun adventure story with lots of monsters. And my favorite was there's a monster called Excalibunny, which is like this blonde rabbit who's wearing a suit of armor and has a magical sword. And I loved Excalibunny.
As far as I can tell, there isn't an audio version of Hollow Monsters by Lee Newbery available either from RNIB or commercially. So, instead, here's a clip of his award-winning book, The Last Firefox.
I'm being chased to my death by a goose, and it's all Lippy's fault. If it wasn't for her and her crazy ideas, I wouldn't be in this mess. Take the pebble game, for example. She came up with it months ago after reading about families hiding pebbles in parks for other families to find. First, you paint a pebble, and when you find another one out in the world, you swap it for your own so someone else can find it. And so the game goes on. Well, Lippy decided we needed to do our own version. And when Lippy decides something, Rue and I have no choice but to play along. We take it in turns to hide a painted pebble somewhere around Bryn Castell, where we live, and post a clue in our group chat. The first person who finds it keeps the pebble and gets to hide theirs next. It was fun, at first, but then Lippy's hiding places started getting more, well, let's just say, imaginative. Only 2 weeks ago, Rue had to ask the man at the pet stall in the market to scoop Lippy's pebble out of one of the fish tanks. Before that, I had to rummage through a ball pit at the indoor play area in town while little kids bounced on my head. So when Lippy sent her latest clue, Roo and I weren't exactly scrambling to get to the pebble first. You will find it in the House of Ducks. I don't know how she comes up with this stuff. Roo took one look at me and shook his head.
You can have this one.
It took a lot of deciphering, but I finally decided that the nesting box on the edge of the lake in the park was the only place in the whole of Bryn Castell that Lippy could possibly mean by the House of Ducks. The nesting box is a small wooden hut built on a platform just a little way out on the lake. It's basically a mansion for ducks. All I had to do was hop onto the platform, lean through the tiny doorway and grab Lippy's pebble.
Sounds easy, eh?
And it was. To begin with, I made sure there were no ducks around and leaped onto the platform. Then I got down on all fours and poked my head through the doorway. It was quite cosy inside, if a bit smelly. Lots of hay and other duck stuff. And there, nestled in the hay, was the pebble. It was perfectly circular and smooth, and painted on it was the sun, with warm yellow rays rippling outwards. Ha! My joy was short-lived. I was just reaching out to pick it up when I heard a nasty-sounding hiss from outside. My whole body tensed, and I slowly retreated out of the wooden box, bottom first. Until today, I didn't really have much of an opinion on geese. I know swans can be vicious with their twisty, never-ending necks and wings that can break your arm with a single beat, but I've never really given geese a lot of thought. Well, now I know the truth. Geese are the most fearsome beasts to roam the earth.
The Last Firefox by Lee Newbery is read by Callum Scott-Howells and is one of four books by Lee in the RNIB library. And fingers crossed, Hollow Monsters gets an audio version soon. And once again, Beck, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, I had a great time.
That's all we've got time for on today's show. We'll be back at the same time next week. But if you can't wait that long, this and over 450 other episodes of Read On are available to download as a podcast. Just search for RNIB Read On in your favourite podcast app. But remember our daily show, Talking Books, featuring the best the RNIB library has to offer, that we're allowed to play on here. That's every day at 2 p.m. or 10 p.m. if you prefer a book at bedtime. The whole schedule is at rnib.org.uk/connect-radio.
Books and accessible reading on RNIB Connect Radio.